Well, Eve has just had a real workout. She has covered a lot of ground, and I hope you appreciate she's given you the, I guess, the Reader's Digest condensed version of the DGAC report. Very impressive. So just to remind you, and please be jotting down your questions. We're going to do questions at the end. I'm sure there's lots of questions that have come up as you've been listening to Eve. So this is just to remind you that the dietary guidelines have not come out yet. This was just a scientific report, a very, very solid scientific report. But if you listen to the press, you might think that they've already come out. It's been misquoted a number of times, I think even recently, that the new dietary guidelines say this or say that. But they haven't said anything yet because they haven't been released, and I think soon is a really good way to put it. We're looking forward to it as much as anybody else. So we're going to turn to, we're going to kind of go from the very, very scientific evidence to what the public is thinking, how the public approaches what they eat. So it's a very, very different approach, and there is a big gap between the two. So what's for dinner, making the dietary guidelines salient to the public, is our challenge, and it is a large challenge. And I don't know about you, but a big favorite topic in our household is, what are we going to have for dinner? And it's a similar question that comes up. I'm a registered dietitian. By the way, I didn't introduce myself. I will do that in a minute. And I've noticed that after nutrition lectures that talk about saturated fats, cholesterol, protein, etc., people tend to say, okay, now what do I cook tonight for dinner? What do I buy at the store? So how can we bridge that gap between the very important science that you've just heard about and what people actually can understand and become, it becomes a practice for them? So just by way of stepping back and introducing myself, being Rachel Hayes right now. I have been with the Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion since 2007, and a lot of what I've done since I started has been on the 2008 Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans. I launched the communication part of that initiative, and we now have 4,500 supporter organizations who we're working with, and we have a blog. So we continue to work on our physical activity guidelines, even as we've moved on to other topics. I have no relationships to disclose. And in terms of ODPHP-related initiatives, I've hoped that you've heard at the APHA meeting this year that we do have a date for the Healthy People 2020 launch. It is December 2nd, and I hope you'll put it on your calendars and join us in Washington. It's going to be open to the public. We're also going to be web streaming it, so go to the Healthy People website and sign up. That registration form should be up by tomorrow. I also want to point out to you that health literacy and user design, user-centered design, are big in our office. And so you'll hear me talk about health literacy quite a bit. And just to give you that definition, the standard definition, it's the ability of people's ability to obtain, process, and use health information to make decisions. And of course, I've already mentioned we have the Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans. And today, we're mostly going to focus on consumer research, and in fact, exclusively on consumer research. Most of it will be on what research we've conducted at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'll touch on two items that relate to USDA, but much of what the USDA is doing in terms of consumer research is in process. So we have no research findings to report as yet. So that's another coming soon item. This gives you a little agenda on the topics we're going to talk about for the next few minutes. We looked at research on healthfinder.gov and how it was developed. We did a review of literature, looked at some expert interviews, took information in through some meetings, conducted focus groups, and then circled back and looked at some survey data just to confirm. I hope that, how many of you have been to the healthfinder.gov website? If I could just have a show of hands. Okay, well, a few of you are familiar with healthfinder.gov. It is a consumer research, award-winning research-based website, I might add, that covers a whole number of topics. In fact, it is comprehensive within disease prevention and health promotion. The redesign of it was based on 4 years of research and 14 studies with 750 persons aged 18 to 84. It covered both the general public and it also covered people with limited health literacy. So what we were looking for was a concurrence, something that the general population would accept as not being dumbed down, but something that others could take in and find useful. So just to give you some insights into what we learned that adults cluster, not surprising, nutrition, obesity, and physical activity together. They love hearing about the benefits. They don't want to know about guidelines, as in physical activity guidelines, dietary guidelines, and they're not interested in barriers. They do like small steps approaches, interactive tools like quizzes, activity logs, menu planners, and recipes. So we're using this information as we move along. We did one of our residents, medical residents, did a review of literature while she was on rotation with us. And we were looking at how people make food decisions and also what works in terms of communication. For nutrition and weight control, probably, again, not surprising, the interest in those two topics goes up as people get older. And for cost and convenience, the interest in those two things go up with low income and non-whites, although I think most of us have some interest in that. We're all busy people. Taste is universal. Taste is number one for everybody. I probably, if we took a poll here, I would guess that almost all of you consider taste as very important. There was a variety of findings on print versus electronic materials. We're mostly going to electronic, but there are some populations where print materials are valued. In terms of feeling better, this review of literature showed that particularly minority and low-income populations value hearing about the benefits of feeling better in terms of weight, healthy eating. Men versus women, again, no news here. Women just are more interested in nutrition topics than men. We conducted expert interviews within HHS, within 11 HHS agencies last fall, using a semi-structured interview process, and I'm just going to highlight the questions and a few of the findings. We asked people how they use the dietary guidelines, and we heard that people use them as a foundation for both policy, materials, and reports, and what has worked well, key messages, simple, specific information and collaborations have been very helpful. Where are the gaps? You probably know this too. There's too many messages. It's too complex. The public finds it very difficult to interpret the difference between what is a serving and what is a portion. People confuse the dietary guidelines and my pyramid. Pretty much everybody is interested in more direct behavior change guidance. We ask our agencies what they had learned from consumer research. They learned quite a bit about how to use visuals, and they've also learned that certain concepts are difficult. The concepts such as fat, saturated fat, and energy balance are particularly difficult, and that messages need to be tailored by audiences. Recommendations they made some recommendations for electronic versus print. Print are particularly helpful for certain populations, such as older adults. Partnerships are good, and that's one of the reasons why we're very glad to see you here today. We hope to have lots of partnerships going forward. They want high-profile spokespersons, Michelle Obama, for example, and we're so glad that she's interested in childhood obesity, and I think she may just be one of our spokespersons. So stay tuned and you'll see what happens with that. They were very interested in keeping messages simple, brief, and actionable. I think that's a theme across all conversations on the dietary guidelines. Now, we've just heard from Eve. You've heard how complicated it is, how many topics we have, but yet our agencies want things to be simple for the public, and the public wants things to be simple. So we have a gap to narrow and to bridge. Dietary guidelines need to be fresh and new, and as always, have message consistency. Last fall, USDA and HHS convened some partnership meetings, and both with federal folks and with external groups, and focused on brand identity. Had some small group discussions, and people felt that the key attributes for the dietary guidelines should be that they're credible, actionable, and simple. Simple coming up again. Must have clear benefits for consumers. We already heard that in the Health Finder research. USDA expert interviews. They talked about a little bit different things came up. Sustained visibility. Can't just launch the dietary guidelines and say goodbye, but there's a lot of work that we need to do together. It's not enough to do a pamphlet. Constant reinforcement is needed. Health literacy came up as an important issue. We need to customize for people, be creative in our programming, such as makeover contests, charity tie-ins, address schools, viral dissemination, I think, is probably going to be a big part of what we're going to be doing. Hope you'll be joining us with that. And, of course, to evaluate. Now I'll turn and spend the next few minutes primarily talking about what we learned in our focus groups this spring. We conducted a series of 6 focus groups in 3 cities, Baltimore, Chicago, and Little Rock, Arkansas. We interviewed people who are adults with limited health literacy who had been seeking information in the last month. We were also wanted to talk to people who were either contemplators or preparers in terms of the trans-theoretical model of change. So we wanted to talk to people who cared about nutrition. We wanted to be razor sharp in focusing our efforts on people who are interested and want to know more. 87% of our participants were high school graduates. The rest had completed some high school. 64% were female. The questions we were asking had to do with how people make decisions about foods, what their understanding is about healthy eating, their barriers, motivators, behaviors, and how they talked and thought about food groups in relationships to healthy eating. What would be helpful for visualizing food portions, and how did they identify actionable goals and messages for themselves? So for barriers and motivators, they equated healthy eating with low in fat, low in sodium, eating more fruits and vegetables, eating a balanced diet, smaller portions, and controlling weight. A lot of these things match up very nicely with what we've heard from the DGAC report. Some participants noted confusion about good and bad fats. So that's important. Barriers, cost, and convenience. Just to give you an example of a woman in our Little Rock, Arkansas focus groups about cost, she said, to get a salad at McDonald's is $4.95 to $5.95, but to get a cheeseburger, it's $2.20. There's a money difference. I got a parfait, water, and grilled chicken, and it was $7.95. I could have gotten a Big Mac, fries, and a Coke for less than $5. So it's costly in their view. Motivators were wanting to understand better about planning ahead, wanting to lose weight, wanting to make healthy food taste good. They didn't always think it did taste good, and health. One gentleman in Little Rock said about, in terms of motivators, do I want to see my kids get married? Do I want to see grandkids? Or do I want to act like there's no tomorrow and throw caution to the wind? So I thought that was very well said. In terms of behaviors, they've already changed or were considering changing. Less sodium, more fruits and vegetables, less sugar and fat, more fiber. But they did, please note here, they did want more information about fats, fiber, and calcium. And these were some areas of misunderstanding. In terms of visualizing portions, we showed a bowl, we showed a plate, we showed measuring cups, and we even showed a video with comparisons between foods and objects. And I'm sure you've seen these, like the deck of cards versus the piece of chicken. And they preferred measuring cups in two groups. One group in Little Rock did prefer a plate, but they had lots of questions when seeing a plate, what that meant. The video was very well received, but they wouldn't be able to retain all the information, so they needed some sort of a print reminder. They equally preferred pamphlets and websites. This is a little odd. They really preferred scare tactics. Show us clogged arteries, you know, show us your brain on drugs type thing. This is not something that most nutritionists are comfortable in doing and probably would ever do. But, you know, interestingly enough, the people who had made changes were those that had had some kind of health issue or somebody in their family. The guy I read the quote from, his father had died at 50, he didn't want to follow suit. So, you know, being scared is a wake-up call for a number of people. I don't know what we do with that. I guess that's one of our challenges, to see if there's something we can make of that. They did like receiving information from health professionals or someone like them. I thought this said it very well. One guy said, make it simple, make it right, and make it quick, and maybe throw in a recipe. And so, again, our challenge after hearing all the topics we have to cover, all the scientific evidence, this crystallizes what we need to do. They want us to get right to the point quickly, make it useful so they can figure out what to serve for dinner, and have it taste good, quick to make, and not too expensive. Well, can we do that? I mean, that again is our challenge. They were also interested in examples of how to incorporate this all into someone's diet and hearing stories that relate to everyday people. So we asked participants to make a list of three things they would like to do in the next month to eat healthier. And about three quarters of the responses were that they plan to buy more of certain foods, certain types of foods like fruits and vegetables, or those with certain nutrients. The most frequent examples were eating more fruits and vegetables, eating less fat, or eating smaller portions. So once we finished our focus groups, we decided, let's go back and look at the overall data on what people are doing. So we looked at the American Dietetic Association Nutrition and You Trends Survey from 2008 and the International Food Information Council 2009 Food and Health Survey. And what we confirmed was that over 50% of Americans are trying to lose weight, about two-thirds are trying to make changes in their diet, and that people have concerns about the type and amount of fat, although they're probably not doing much about it. So as I move to thanking you, and before I do so, I just want to mention what ODPHP is planning to do. We are working very closely with USDA to formulate plans. We will be doing a joint campaign. But some of the things that we know that we're going to be doing are some fact sheets for adults with limited health literacy that are very practical on things like taste, convenience, and budgeting. We're taking into account what we've heard. We've just had a series of health literacy webinars. I hope some of you were able to participate. Thank you very much. And we had a workshop. We're going to be tweeting. We're going to be on Facebook. We're going to have information on Health Finder in Spanish about healthy eating. We're going to do a wraparound curriculum for some videos we'll do along with our fact sheets and test them in communities. And so I think we're going to be quite busy. We hope we'll have the opportunity to work with some of you as we move forward. And I'm going to close by saying thank you very much for your interest in the dietary guidelines and for your attention today. So we now have some time. Actually, we have more than 15 minutes for questions. And I think what we'll do is just get started. And we have plenty of time, so please feel free. It's an informal gathering here.
I'll just say that in the 2010 report, that was one of the recommendations of the committee, was that it shouldn't just be 2 years and older, and that it should be expanded to include that age group. Currently, the mandate, what we are asked to do by law, is 2 and older. So it currently is 2 and older. It was recommended to decrease it, but that's where we are.
I'm going to just go ahead and stay up here. Okay, other questions? Great.
I was interested about the not recommending to pay attention to glycemic index, even though glycemic index is all about sugar and fiber. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
It's a good question. I think that just dealing... I can just say that, you know, if you look at the report, you can see kind of the questions that they looked at. But I think a lot of the research on glycemic index and load really deals more as a, in terms of medical nutrition therapy. They just didn't think that it needed to be a tool that should be used by the general public. So it's not necessarily that it's an invalid concept. It's just for providing dietary guidelines for the general public, it's not something that needs to be a major focus.
Oh, okay.
Is that?
Okay, very good.
So you mentioned that people confuse the dietary guidelines with MyPyramid, and maybe I'm one of those people. I'm not in nutrition, but I thought the previous pyramid, the pyramid concept, if it actually is a pyramid, where it's what you eat less of is on top and what you eat more of on the bottom, is a helpful construct for communicating this. But I just wanted to say that the mypyramid.gov I thought was an example in, like, Philip Morris could have used mypyramid.gov in its anti-smoking campaigns. I mean, it was so not only not helpful, but, like, harmful, that whole idea. And I'm just really hoping that goes by the wayside. But again, I don't know if I'm confusing, but my understanding is the pyramid stuff is a way to translate the dietary guidelines into knowledge for the general public. And I'm just, like, really hoping you get rid of mypyramid.gov.
So could you say a little bit more about what you found bothersome about it? You said it wasn't helpful. Can you say in what way?
Okay, so the whole idea of a pyramid, right, is that what you eat more of is on the bottom, and what you eat less of is on the top. So, you know, when they did the My Pyramid, and they turned it sideways, and now it's just stripes, and nobody knows what each of the stripe colors are for. Nobody does. Not even, like, people I know who work at USDA know what these stripes are. And then, like, you have to go on a computer and type Schiff's stuff in. And we know, like, the people who are in most need of dietary advice are people who, like, don't have computers, who are low income, and like me, like, I even have a computer, I'm on it all the time. I'm not going on mypyramid.gov, sorry, I'm not.
Well, and that's very helpful feedback.
And, you know, it's just not helpful. Whereas, for example, the Harvard Healthy Eating Pyramid, I found really, really helpful. It's, you know, evidence-based pyramid. Actually lost 15 pounds following the Harvard Healthy Eating Pyramid.
Congratulations.
And, you know, because, like, it's like, oh, okay, like, potatoes and red meat are, like, never, or, you know, almost never foods. And, like, yeah, I mean, it was just, that was very, very, very helpful
you
to
want
me.
To comment?
Whereas my pyramid is...
Well, I'll just say that, yeah, I mean, the MyPyramid is an educational, or was developed to be an educational tool to support the guidelines concepts. yeah, they're not the same thing. And that there is testing going on to, and it is being looked at, the icon or that concept is being looked at in research right now.
Thank you for listening.
Sure, absolutely, sure. Please.
I was interested in, you mentioned saturated fat as tied to type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. Were there other connections that were made specifically to development of type 2 diabetes?
My recommendation, I mean, I'm not going to, there were a variety of questions that asked about type 2 diabetes as an outcome, so it wasn't just saturated fat. I would honestly say, in my mind, that probably the best route to find out which questions dealt with that would be to go to that website, the nutritionevidencelibrary.com, and just search for type 2 diabetes, search for glucose, and you'll get some of those questions that they addressed under those topics. I primarily dealt with the energy balance concepts when I worked with the committee, so I don't remember all the type 2 diabetes questions, but a variety of questions addressed that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, other questions?
Yeah, this is a communications question. I'm just curious about whether or not you are working with industry, since they're so good at getting us to eat what we shouldn't.
And there is a Dietary Guidelines Alliance that is made up of a variety of food industry representatives and others. So they convene, maybe it's like once a quarter, and they are also doing research, consumer research and testing. So there's a variety, and you know, it's going to take the whole nation working together. It's not something that the government can do by itself. So I think the more organizations that get on board and try to be influential in a helpful way, the better. So it is encouraging the amount of participation that we're having. Right. That would be an interesting line of inquiry. That was not our line of inquiry. So we were really just trying to be a little bit more general, looking at the DGAC report and the translation chapter. We were looking at overall body weight, things to eat more of, things to eat less of, how could we help people do that. So we really didn't get into kind of, you know, some of the finer really, you know, how can we help people with portion sizing, kind of very basics. But I think that would be worthy of some study. And yeah, if anybody here is doing that kind of study, please speak up.
And that's what we said, too, that DGAC noted that, you know, this is a major area of communication issue. That, you know, you can talk about, they talked about benefit-risk ratio, but on a consumer level, it's a real difficult concept. So I think that it's kind of a phase, you know. The major key concepts, there's so many concepts, you know, major key concepts are being looked at in consumer research now. That has to be a piece that is developed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got a couple more questions.
Okay, is there any dialogue across agencies about how to promote more growing fruits and vegetables and making them less expensive and growing less corn and making, you know, corn syrup less ubiquitous?
There probably are. I don't think, I don't
know.
Yeah,
neither one of our agencies do that directly. I mean, we deal more with the guidance piece of it,
right,
not the commodity piece of it.
So, yeah, whatever discussions there are going on, we wouldn't probably know about.
We're not involved in that piece.
Yes.
Well, but now, let me follow up with that. Mm-hmm. Would you feel comfortable talking about that in your jobs, or is that sort of like forbidden?
Do I feel comfortable talking about,
you know, the farm bill and the corn, overproduction of corn and how that affects the diet?
I think, you know, all of us have personal opinions, but we're also, as federal workers, not allowed to comment on bills and legislation and taxes and that kind of thing. So
there. Coming up the next is 4356 coming up at 4:30 that you should go to.
Yeah, it's very.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It is a, you know, you're bringing up a very important topic, and I don't want to slide it by any means. We have another question here.
Our chronic disease prevention program in the last couple of years has been trying to translate both the physical activity guidelines and the dietary guidelines into language that everyday people in our county will actually understand, and neither one of those documents that come from your department come even close. I mean, the highest educated clinical practitioner may get it, but it's so very medical-oriented that we have no hope that people will actually understand. So we've taken quite a lot of time to put pictures and simplified language, but in the area of dietary guidelines, it became clear in reviewing materials that there were a lot of politics that were contributing to who got to contribute to the guidelines, what could be included in the guidelines, that I think in some ways keeps some important information from the general public. And if really what they want is for it to be simple, correct,
right,
and quick, to have some pieces of vital information being kept from them, it doesn't complete the picture for them. So we have had to go to different sources to try to figure out what the truth might be, because it doesn't feel like complete truth is available to us. And I don't know if that's just us, but it became clear in the review and the
Yeah, excuse me a minute, if I might, just on the physical activity guidelines note to you, I really recommend that you look at the Be Active Your Way booklet that we put together with a health literacy expert. We used all of the principles of health literacy, both in terms of design and text, and we made every effort. It's written probably about at the sixth grade level. The materials that our office is going to be out with the dietary guidelines is going to be written at the sixth grade level, using scenarios, using people's stories, very practical. So I think that you're right. In a sense, there's not a lot of this out there, but that's where we're trying to break new ground. And so, you know, we're with you on that. Can we cover every single thing, even on the booklet, Be Active Your Way? It covers many, many concepts and builds on it. We probably haven't covered every single thing that you could cover. So if you have some areas that you'd like to discuss, you know, after the session that we can add to, you know, we'd be happy to talk about that.
And I'll just also add, if you feel like there are topics that you think should be considered, or the dietary guidelines process and the physical activity guidelines process does have public comment periods. So during the development process, and literally some of the topics that were considered by the 2010 committee were because public comments were made about them. And they were not generated by the committee. It was just there was such a public interest in like plant protein, and that was a topic that was considered by the committee. So throughout the dietary guidelines process, the public comment period is currently closed because that part of the process is done. But in 2015, which really won't start up that far from now, submit comments. I mean, you have an opportunity to do it at dietaryguidelines.gov. You can come to the public meetings. You can submit comments on the report. Every single one of those comments is read. It's given to the committee, it's read by the staff. So if there are topics that you think aren't covered, I would highly encourage you to submit a comment. Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you.
I was just gonna add to what she said, that there's a credibility issue with the advice coming from the government, because I think people see it as heavily influenced by lobbyists, corn growers, et cetera. I'm really glad to hear that you have more transparency and you're using this evidence-based stuff. But I think, you know, to help with the credibility would be to use communication tools that are very easy
Yeah, and that is why an evidence-based review is done. It is done to help with the transparency of it. And there are questions, and there would be questions that if there is guidance that's different from what the evidence showed, and you know, it's got the purpose and the Data Quality Act says that it has to be based on a body of evidence. So that's the purpose of that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you know your point is well taken, and I think we will need a lot of help and a lot of working together to get the messages out. There'll be a lot of opportunities, I think. Through now we have viral messaging, we have a lot of ways for neighbors to get to neighbors. So I think it's a little bit, things are opening up now in ways that we can get to people, you know, whether it's a tweet. So there's a lot more I think that we can do. And if we do anything like we did with the physical activity guidelines, we're having webinars, ongoing webinars and blogs, and there's just a lot more that, you know, you're not just sending out one-way communication anymore, that we can have a dialogue. So I'm glad, you know, for the topics that you brought up, and we can continue to have a conversation about that. Is there any other questions before we adjourn? One more question.
Yeah, that's part of the when we look at the methodological rigor of a study, it's looking at who it is discussed the funding agency. So yes, it is considered, it's discussed by the committee, it is considered in the grading of the quality of the evidence. So yeah, it is a factor. It's reported, it's looked at, yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for coming, and thank you for your comments.